Joining us on Perspectives today is Don Winslow. Don is the author of a recent book, The Cartel. Some say it's a sequel to The Power of the Dog, but I think it's a standalone book. But I do encourage you to pick up The Power of the Dog. It's a lot of reading, some 1,200 pages or so, but it took this young man 40 years to put this together, and it's an incredible book. I can't say enough about it. We'd like to welcome Don to the show. Thank you for being with us, Don.
Oh, thanks for having me, Louie. I appreciate it.
And we want to talk a little bit about yourself, the fact that I mentioned that you started out as a journalist, and then you also went from being a journalist to a private investigator. Interesting turn there. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, when I grew up in Rhode Island, that little tiny state up in the Northeast. It's probably smaller than El Paso. And I wanted to be a journalist because that's what I was reading. I'm still a newspaper junkie. And I went to the University of Nebraska to the journalism school, and they sent me eventually to Africa where I did some journalism work. But then I really decided that I wanted to be a novelist, so I moved to New York to be a writer. And of course, like everybody else, I was a starving writer, you know, within weeks, and ended up as a private investigator.
And what led you to go into becoming a private investigator? I mean, I see the tie there as far as, you know, investigative journalism and PIs, New York, especially old-time radio. A lot of those dramas were based on PAs or private dicks, as they call them, in reference to Dick
right.
Tracy. So what about the road from turning over from journalist to private investigator? Was that difficult, or how did that come about?
Well, it was sort of an accident, Louie. I was in New York. I needed a job. I got a job as an assistant manager in movie theaters. And in those days, you know, late 70s in New York, most of the movie theaters were just glittering walls of theft. Everybody was stealing from everybody. I turned in some honest box office figures and got fired. And then a buddy of mine who was running a chain of legitimate movie theaters on Times Square needed someone to come in to kind of uncover the theft in that chain, and I did, and then I just stayed with the detective agent.
That sounds almost like another novel on its own.
You know, it may be. Maybe one day I will, but boy, it was crazy times there in Times Square in those days. You know, there was a crazy guy who'd go up on the roof of buildings and drop cinder blocks off just sort of randomly, and so when you went in the alleys, you always squeezed yourself against the wall of the building, you know,
wow,
because of the trajectory of cinder blocks coming down, and it was all crack cocaine, and it was tough times there.
And as I mentioned that you went in to become a PI, and you said it was almost an accident, as you told us just now, but this also included not just people dropping cinder blocks from roofs, but arson fires, and that led to one of your other novels.
Yeah, you know, years later, you know, I took sort of a break from the investigative business. I went back to graduate school, got an MA. I'm educated very narrowly. I have a BA in African Studies and an MA in Military History, which makes me a hardcore unemployable. You know? So I went off back to Africa for a number of years as a safari guide on photographic safaris. And then I came back, and again, I needed work. And so I went back into the investigative field, but sort of on a higher level. So they were sending me out to California. And now we're in the 1990s, and California is the arson capital of America because everything that people bought on margin during the boom, they were burning down and selling back to the insurance company during the bust. And so, yeah, that led to a novel of mine called California Fire and Life about arson investigators.
We are visiting with author Don Winslow. Don is the author of the recent novel, The Cartel. It is seen as the sequel to The Power of the Dog. And let's talk a little bit about that first novel, The Power of the Dog, because it's interesting. People have not read that. It reads very well, as I mentioned. Great narrative. It's great storytelling. And as far as you taking us back and forth, you take us for a wild ride. And not only just focusing on Mexico, but I think people will be surprised that it goes back as far as, you know, Bugsy Siegel, and then when you take us to the Hell's Kitchen in the 1970s, it's almost like we're reading some of the stuff from, you know, Al Capone and some of the earlier gangsters from the 1950s, 60s. And then you take us back to Mexico and you bring us back into the United States. And so How did this book come about? Had you been interested in the drug wars before, and this is something that you wanted to address?
No, not at all. And one morning in 1998, I live in the San Diego area. I was, reading my early morning newspaper, and 19 people just across the border had been massacred, 19 innocent people. And I had never been interested in the drug trafficking thing at all. But I was trying to find out why. You know, how could anything come to the point where people would be willing to do something like that? And so I started looking into it. And the more that I read, I realized that to understand what had happened in 98, you had to know what happened in 93 in Mexico. To understand what happened in 93, you had to know what happened in 86. To understand what happened in 86, you had to go back to 1971 and so on and so forth. And then I realized that you couldn't explain what happened in Mexico just by writing about Mexico. You had to look at Washington, D.C. You had to look at the mafia, both the Irish mob and the Italian mob in New York, to really understand the drug trade and what had gone on in those years. So, yeah, it became a mammoth kind of sprawling story.
And what about your research? I'm sure that you had to do a lot of traveling, a lot of research, a lot of reading. And as I mentioned earlier, you take us through various decades and various time periods as far as the crime scene, organized crime in New York, in New Orleans, in California, in Mexico, just about everywhere.
Yeah, you know, you can get on an airplane or a train, but you can't get in a time machine, you know, at least not yet. So, you know, a lot of the research was, you know, going to places, talking to people, doing that kind of thing. But a lot of it was archival, you know, that you had to go back into court records, FBI records, trial transcripts, all of that kind of thing from the 1970s and the 80s to try to get some of this information. CIA reports, you know, which would come, of course, highly redacted. You know, I'd get pages sent where most of the page was blacked out. So, yeah, but, you know, I'm a historian by training, so I love that kind of thing.
Now, as far as talking about the power of the dog, we meet the two main characters, Adán Barrera and Art Keller. And so Art Keller is a DEA agent, and Adán Barrera, at the time when we just meet him, he's selling jeans.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about how those characters developed, and perhaps, you know, some people might say, well, I know somebody like that. And I think we can say that we've all read or heard about somebody like that.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think that both these books, both Dog and Cartel, are pretty close to the bone in terms of factual events. And I think that anybody familiar, you know, with that drug scene could look at some of these characters and some of these events and see that they're, you know, at least inspired by real-life people or real-life events. In terms of their personalities, I mean, that's fictional, you know. I knew that that I needed a guide to take us through, you know, these long decades and across all these miles, and I wanted an idealistic DEA agent, at least who starts idealistic, you know, who really believes in what he's doing and really believes in the war on drugs. And then, of course, you need his direct opposite. And Adán, as you alluded to, starts, as did one of the major, you know, drug cartel leaders, selling jeans, taking them from San Diego, bringing them down to Tijuana, and selling them without the customs duties. And he evolves into the most powerful drug lord in Mexico. And so the two books together, you know, tell the 40-something year story of this blood feud, this vendetta between these two men who start as friends.
We are visiting with Don Winslow. Don is the award-winning author, New York Times bestseller. The book is The Cartel, and it's a story about Mexican in the United States drug trade, the drug wars that have been going on over the last 40 years. Both books open up with a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about you know, what you intended to. Well, it's a very powerful message, but I want to get it from your point of view. At least, you know, I may have interpreted it wrong.
I'd love to hear your interpretation. Let me give you mine. But, okay. You know, I always believe that every reader is, you know, has an interpretation available that's just as valid as mine. You know, you have a right to that. I wanted to start off with an image of innocence and loss, because to me that's what both these books are about. You know, I've always said that Power of the Dog was more about religion than it was about drugs. you know, was set in the drug world, but it's about people who lose their faith and then have to try to find a way of living in this world without it. And so Dog literally starts with this sort of image of a pietà, you know, a grieving mother holding a dead son. And so when I picked up the cartel, I wanted to return immediately to something related to that image, to bring Art Keller right back into the world that he'd started in, and bring the reader right back into that image of innocence.
And I think as I read that, first of all, I was grieved because of this picture of the mother and child, and the fact that, you know, the way it's described is just so real. And the second book, when you hear the baby's cry, you think, wow, a new life. But then you hear the helicopter and you're going, wow, this child has been born into a very different world. And there are a lot of challenges ahead for this person.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I had that in mind as well, you know, a new life. But then, you know, this sort of shattering sound of the helicopter rotors and then the gunfire and all of that. And you realize it's just going on and on and on, as has the war on drugs.
Now, you mentioned it's a kind of a book of religion, the first one, The Power of the Dog, and you do read a lot about the deep roots of Catholicism in Mexico, but then you also hear the story, I guess, that nobody wants to hear, but at the same time they go, well, I kind of assume something, or everybody turns the other way, when at one point Angel Tio says, I'll get married by the church, and if they won't allow it, you know, I will buy them a hospital or build them a school, whatever.
Right.
Pretty much saying, you know, people can be bought off.
It's been an extraordinarily complicated relationship, you know, between the cartels and the church and cartels and Catholicism, you know, because the cartels have developed sort of offshoot religions. You know, back in the era of Power of the Dog, you know, it was Jesus Malverde who was sort of the narco saint, you know, based on a possibly fictional, you know, narco runner from long ago. And lately it's been, you know, Santissima Muerte cult, you know, a sort of a bizarre offshoot of Catholicism. But, you know, I think that the church on various levels has negotiated with the cartels, either fought them or negotiated with them. And one of the things that the cartels are so clever about doing is sort of this double-fisted approach to controlling the population. On the one hand, terrorizing them, and on the other hand, doing things like building churches, building clinics and schools and hospitals, and buying, you know, attempt to buy salvation. You know, it certainly is the truth, though, that the major drug lords back in the 90s had a meeting with the papal nuncio in Mexico in which, you know, all their sins were forgiven in exchange for massive donations to earthquake relief. So it has been a complicated relationship. People don't like talking about it, but there you go.
We're visiting with award-winning author and journalist Don Winslow. Don is the author of the book The Cartel. When it opens up, you dedicate it to the lives of the journalists who have sacrificed their lives in the line of duty. And there are a lot of them.
There are far too many of them. You know, well, it's one of the ironically, undertold stories of this whole thing, you know, and that the cartels at a certain point became very sophisticated in knowing that they not only had to control the action, but they had to control the narrative. In almost the sense that ISIS is trying to do now. And so, you know, at first they started bribing journalists or attempting to bribe journalists, but the ones they couldn't bribe, they killed. You know, people died trying to tell this story and trying to tell the truth. A lot of newspapers simply stopped covering the drug war because they didn't want, you know, any more of their people killed.
At the same time, when the story has to be told, as I think you mentioned in the first book, the fact that at one point Art Keller says, I will, you know, let the newspaper know, I will know everybody know. But at the same time, you see that Washington is kind of looking the other way and also saying, like, we don't believe you, Art. You know, this is all in your head, you're imagining. And Art is not only battling the war in Mexico, but a war against himself personally, and then also against his employers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Art's fighting on all fronts, including his own. Yeah, you know, back in the 80s, we did a pretty good job stopping cocaine imports coming into Florida. And we had, you know, defoliated the Mexican poppy fields. And so there are a lot of bureaucrats in Washington who declared victory. And then here are these guys down in Mexico and along the California border, DEA people screaming at Washington, you know, there's coke flowing through here like a river, because the Colombian cartels had made arrangements with the Mexican cartel to bring the coke up through Mexico. And so you had to fight this bureaucratic battle. But, you know, generally speaking, we haven't wanted to look a lot at what's happening down in Mexico, either as a government or as a country.
And that's one thing that I'm sure a lot of the public in general has often said, why don't we stop it? If we go over to the Middle East, if we go to Afghanistan and we stop what's going on there, why can't we stop what's going on in Mexico? And of course, you know, Mexico is a sovereign country, and people just, I guess, don't understand that we just can't go in and invade country and just decide to shut it down. We need each other.
Well, you know, you just get on, Louis, of course. You know, listen, we have invaded Mexico several times, and the resentment from that still lingers. You know, you and
You're
I
right.
are both right now sitting in spots that used to be Mexico. My house in San Diego sits in a place that used to be Mexico. And I think that there's a lot of still hostility from the Mexicans toward the United States. I understand it. But even invading Mexico, even if we were to do what some of the right-wingers want to do, simply wouldn't work. It hasn't worked, by the way, in Iraq or Afghanistan, and it wouldn't work in Mexico. But the major reason it wouldn't work is because the root of the problem is not in Mexico. The root of the problem is in the United States. We're the market. We're the buyer. Without a buyer, there's no seller. Without demand, there's no supply. And so until we fix our drug problem here, there's no point whatsoever in doing it in Mexico.
And it's interesting that people look back at our history and will see the connections that have been there all along. For example, in Bradley's The China Mirage, he talks about, you know, the dealings with opium and the fact that FDR's grandfather was
exactly
a drug trader.
Was.
And a lot of people say, wait a minute. That was different. It was, kind of like, I guess, justifying John Kennedy's dad with the bootlegging.
I was just about to bring up, you know, John Kennedy's dad. Listen, you know, Balzac said it years and years ago, behind every great fortune, there's a great crime. And the hypocrisy on this issue is mind-boggling. You know, if you sell enough booze, you can be an overnight guest in the White House. If you sell enough cocaine, you go to the big house, you know. So I think that our thinking on this has just become sort of sclerotic and puritanical, and we really need to take an honest look, as you alluded to our own history and to our own policies. Failing that, this just goes on and on and on.
We are visiting with award-winning author and journalist Don Winslow. Don is the author of the recent book, The Cartel. He's also the author of the book, The Power of the Dog, which I would recommend that you read both books, Power of the Dog first and, of course, this one next. It's a lot of reading, but it's so fast that you can just whiz through these books, I mean, and want to read them again because they're that good.
And thank you.
You're welcome. And if Jeff Shara writes historical novels about the Civil War, and so had this been based on a real-life story, would people have still read it? Because it seems like they read it a little bit more carefully, saying, well, you know, this is just a novel. It's not really happening.
Yeah, you know, well, it's funny, you know, when I was writing Dog, I'd get notes from my editor saying, boy, this is over the top or this is too much. And I wrote back the same note every time. Yeah, but that's what really happened. Same thing with The Cartel. I would say that 90% of what's in The Cartel and probably 80-something percent of what's in Dog really did happen in one form or another. Now, I've obviously disguised names and some places and moved some things around, but, you know, my editor at Knopf, in fact, called The Cartel a docu-novel. So it's very, very close to the bone, very closely based on fact. But and sometimes, and people have asked me, you know, well, why didn't you write it as straight nonfiction? And the answer is, well, because I'm a novelist, but also because I think that fiction sometimes can do things that journalism can't. You know, we have that license to go into people's heads and make up their thoughts and their emotions in a way that journalists really can't and or shouldn't. And I think that that gets the reader, you know, closer to these characters and closer to the events in a more emotional and sometimes impactful way.
We're visiting with Don Winslow. Don is the award-winning author and journalist of the recent novel, The Cartel. It's interesting that we're talking about, you know, people will read a novel and you have more liberties as a novelist. Going back to Mario Puzo's The Godfather, I mean, when that was shown, it just took off and all of a sudden they were spinoffs and people always referred to Don Corleone and Al Pacino, Michael. And in your novel, you also mentioned the fact that it's become this American pop culture has been adopted by some members of the cartels where they even have a where Al Pacino becomes a, almost like a verb.
A verb, yeah. Somebody Al Pacino, somebody in a restaurant. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I never heard, and I grew up in an area with a lot of mob, I never heard the word Godfather used in that context until the movie came out. It was always the boss. I never heard Godfather used in other than the religious sense. The Mexican cartel, when it first formed the major cartel back in the early 80s, they had seen the film, and the man who formed it said, almost ironically, call me Godfather, and it stuck. And so it's one of those rare instances of art imitating life and then life imitating art, you know, because mobsters and all kinds of organizations saw those films. It loved what they saw and in many ways modeled themselves after.
We're visiting with award-winning New York Times bestselling author and journalist Don Winslow. Don is the author of the book The Cartel. He is also the author of the prior book, The Power of the Dog, and these are two books that go together, but The Cartel is a standalone novel that you can read, but as I've been telling you before, I think that you need to read both books to get the entire story because Art Keller and Adán Barrera, as we mentioned earlier, they become good friends, but then also later on, like in The Cartel, we read about just how lavish and how he still continues to control things, even inside the big house, let's say Christmas, for example.
Yeah, again, you know, this is really based on fact. These are true stories, you know, that, you know, Chapo Guzman, the alleged head of the Sinaloa cartel, was in prison for years and really ran the prison. He had movie nights. He had hookers brought in once a week, you know, for his friends and his associates. And they did hold a Christmas party in which family and friends arrived. So, you know, as well as one could live in prison, these guys lived pretty well in prison. But again, you know, that's not just a Mexican phenomenon. That was the same in Providence, Rhode Island, in the prison there when I was growing up in that area. You know, the guys had feasts and special food brought in and really lived pretty well.
Now, the part that is very disturbing and it's in The Power of the Dog is that when they take Art Keller's friend, Ernie, and, you know, you get reminiscence of Enrique Camarena and what happened to him.
Of course.
It's just, gosh, I mean, the narrative in that is just you hear it, you see it. I heard the audiobook also, and it's just it's unbelievable.
It was brutal to write. And again, you know, as a writer, I don't want to in any way compare myself, of course, to the people who suffered through these things and the families and all of that and the journalists down there. But it is tough stuff to write. And I think it, at some point a writer has to make a choice. You know, do I sort of sterilize this stuff and keep the reader at a distance from it? Or do I bring the reader really close to it and write it as realistically as I can? In most cases, I've made that second choice because I think that people should know what happens and what goes on and feel it a little bit, you know. But it's tough stuff to research and tough stuff to write. And I think that sometimes you feel, you know, that you're walking a very, very fine line. between realistic writing and exploitation.
Don, how have things changed as far as when you were taking us to Hell's Kitchen in the 70s? I imagined back in the 1940s some of the stories that I've read about Hell's Kitchen back then. But as Art Keller mentions in that book, The Power of the Dog, he's telling, is it Althea, his wife?
Yes.
Althea, he's telling her, don't worry, you'll be okay. They don't touch families. And that was a code that had been around for a long time, and the code of Omerta also. But that has changed, has it not?
Well, it has. I mean, in Mexico, there is no code anymore. And that really happened when one cartel leader, you know, had the wife of another cartel leader decapitated and threw their children off a bridge. And that was a, no hideous pun intended, a watershed moment. And then all the rules were off. And we have seen, of course, just the random slaughter of families in Mexico, and not just, you know, cartel people's families, but completely innocent families and journalist families and policemen. And it's been a horrible show. So what used to be a code no longer exists. And in terms of the Italian-Sicilian mob, you know, it's unrecognizable from what it was even back in the 70s. The RICO predicates and, you know, Rudy Giuliani and the feds have really done a number on, you know, what we would have known as the mafia is a shadow of its former self. Does it still exist? Certainly, but it's nowhere near as powerful as it used to be.
We're getting ready to wrap up here, Don, but in finality, I'd like to ask you, what about the border, and does that play a role? And I'm talking about the border between the United States and Mexico as far as touching who's off limits, because I have a friend who is a journalist, and one of the things that he was told was, don't worry, they can't hurt an American because they know the publicity that it will bring. But the problem is that you do not look American. So does being American put you off limits?
I don't know that it puts me off limits, but I think it goes a long way toward doing that. You know, yes, I mean, and another reason I dedicated the book, you know, to those journalists, because I'm aware that I'm, you know, in relative safety as opposed to those people. You know, yeah, I think, look, the cartels, who are relative peace now, you know, it's what I refer to as the Pax Narcotica with the government and therefore by extension somewhat with our government, are not going to prod the tiger, you know, and because, you know, business is going pretty well with some exceptions and all of that. So, yeah, I don't worry about it very much.
Well, Don, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. It's been a joy, and I'm sorry it's only half an hour. We could have been talking for hours.
I was really enjoying the conversation.
Well, thank you. If you're ever in the El Paso area, come on by and visit us. We want to thank you again.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Thank you.
I'll give you a ring. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Don Winslow, award-winning journalist and author of The Cartel. And if you'd like to find out more information about The Cartel, you can go to Amazon.com or Knopf.com and Google Don Winslow, and you can see the other book I was mentioning, The Power of the Dog, and then The Cartel. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Belinda Fernandez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.